Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An article in the New York Times caught our attention. We thought it'd be a fun hour. What should you choose, time or money? Given the choice between more time or more money, which would you pick? And the article goes on, Professor Hirschfield, who's one of our guests this hour, faced a choice. He was invited to teach a weekend seminar out of state, but he had a baby girl at home born 12 weeks earlier. The pay would offset the cost of childcare, but require 2 days of not bonding with the baby. We'll find out how he made his decision about that and which one might be the road to greater happiness for you, time or money. We have two guests with us this hour. Cassie McGillner-Holmes is Associate Professor of Marketing at UCLA's Anderson School of Management, studies happiness, highlighting the role of time. Her research articles have been published in all kinds of academic journals, Psychological Science, Journal of Consumer Research, and the list goes on. And she's written for The Economist, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal. She's been on NPR. Psychologist Hal Hirschfield is also with us. He studies how thinking about time transforms the emotions and alters the judgments and decisions that people make. One of his most well-known discoveries suggests that people who are confronted with their future selves experience a connection that influences long-term financial and ethical decision-making. That's interesting. We're going to be welcoming phone calls, and that's the question for you this hour. We'll see if you change your mind by the end of the hour or not. Given the choice between more time or more money, which would you pick? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Cassie, hello. Thanks very much for being with us. Are you there, Cassie?
Yes, there we go.
Okay, yeah, we hear you just fine now. And Hal Hirschfield, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, great to have you. You know, my mother, this is funny that this is the title of the article. My mother used to say to me, she called me Kathy. If she said it once, she said it 1,000 times when I was growing up. Remember, Kathy, time is money. Always she said that to me. So it's obvious to me what the answer is. But isn't that interesting? She said it all the time.
We'll see how that affected you over the years, right?
Oh, it's definitely time. Anybody who knows me will tell you it's time. So tell me about the study that you did. It's really fascinating, and the responses of most people, fascinating. We'll get to your choice, Professor Hirschfield, as we go on, what you decided to do. But you asked how many people, and tell me about the makeup of the study.
Sure. I can start and then let Cassie jump in. It was a series of studies, actually, but in total it was around 5,000 people who participated in our studies. And, you know, very simply, we put out a straightforward question to people, which was, given the choice, what would you choose, more money or more time? And we looked at their responses to this question. We also asked them, you know, to what extent would you want the thing that you asked for? You know, so how much more do you want money than time or time than money, depending on what they said? And then we also looked at things like how happy they reported themselves being, how much satisfaction they had with their lives, et cetera. That was the general setup of the study. And in a nutshell, what we found is that even though a majority of our respondents chose to have more money than more time, what we found is that the people who chose time over money actually reported being happier and more satisfied with their lives. And let me just add one really important caveat, which is that this result held even when we took into account how much money and how much time people had. So in other words, we statistically controlled for that. Another way of saying this is just that we tried to level the playing field statistically so we could compare somebody with the same amount of money and the same amount of time and say, two people, if they kept everything equal, and one chose time and one chose money, who would be happier over time?
Mm-hmm. Is it also part of other studies that show that you have to be making, though, a certain amount of money for you to even be able to think of choosing time over money? I've read somewhere this figure of $75,000, Cassie.
Yeah, so that is work that's looked at. There's actually been decades of research that have been grappling with the It's a slightly different question than we were asking, which is basically what's the relationship between how much money you have and happiness, with the question of basically, you know, can money buy happiness?
Mm-hmm.
And what, while there is actually across the research, there's been some inconsistencies in the findings. That $75,000 came from a wonderful paper in 2010, and they had a huge sample. And basically what they found was they measured income and found, and also not only they measured happiness in two ways. One was how happy you feel over the course of your sort of day-to-day life, sort of how frequently do you feel positive, as well as how satisfied people are with their lives. And what they found was that over $75,000, that's a sort of statistical amount within the United States, that you didn't see an increase in how happy you felt over the course of your day-to-day life, suggesting that I would say that that's above sort of making ends meet. But once you feel fairly comfortable in your financial well-being, and then you get to this point of having a little bit more flexibility, and at that point that you actually see no relationship between happiness over the day-to-day life as well as an income. But I will point out that though that life satisfaction does continue to increase with wealth or income.
So when people chose time, or when you think of being happy with more time, what did people say they would do with their time? What kind of time did they want, and for what?
Yeah, so we asked, we were sort of interested in what time meant. You know, are they saying that they want, you know, a couple more hours in their day? I know that both Hal and I, with young kids and working full time, it's really every hour counts, and it's that sense of time feeling constrained, that sort of day-to-day schedule. But then there's this also more general sense of, you know, do we want more years added to the end of our lives? And so we asked people after they chose either time or money, and then amongst those who chose time, we asked to what extent they were choosing more hours in their day or more years in their life. And we found that people who chose time wanted both types of time. It was generally this, or there was this general notion of time. And it's not that choosing one type of time or another was related to happiness. It was about wanting more time in general. And then when we asked why they wanted more time or more money, you saw some interesting differences there, where people who chose time were more likely to be focusing on how they would spend it. Certainly there were some money choosers who were focusing on how they would spend it, but actually money choosers focused more on the sense that they didn't have enough, whereas time choosers actually also, some of them reported not feeling like they didn't have enough. But time choosers tended to focus on how they would spend it, and also they tended to focus on expenditures that were more conducive to well-being, more so than money choosers. So they were more likely to think about spending it on wants as opposed to needs. So, you know, cultivating a personal hobby versus getting, you know, that day's chores done. And also they talked about, or there were many mentions of spending it on other people or with other people, as opposed to it being sort of independent expenditures. And there's been wonderful work by some of our colleagues, including Mike Norton and Liz Dunn, who has looked at expenditures of money and finding that people are happier spending money on other people than on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what this suggests is there's also a nice similar effect with respect to time, that perhaps spending time on others or with others versus oneself is conducive to greater happiness.
Mm. Hal, tell me about this study that you did, which I think is fascinating. College students shown images of their own faces altered to appear 40 years older, and what that taught you and researchers about this question of time versus money.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, so that was a separate line of work, but in that particular study, we were trying to figure out why it might be the case that people sometimes fail to make decisions that could benefit them in the long run, which, you know, I would say a lot of the stuff that Cassie and I are working on here really does boil down to that trade-off between what I might want right now and what might be good in the long run. And in the study that you just referenced, we used various forms of technology and graphic artists to show people vivid images of themselves when they were older. So these were younger people. We showed them what they would look like around retirement age. Mm. In an effort to get them to think more deeply about the decisions that they were making, especially within the context of putting money aside for, you know, in their 401k or other sorts of retirement accounts. You know, the idea there is that it's often very hard to envision our future selves and how the things that we decide to do right now will end up affecting us in the long run. So that was the gist of that line of work.
I guess it wouldn't be terribly surprising, consider the nature of the society that we live in, all the tremendous advertising, all of the homes with three-car garages and the way a lot of people live, for people to answer money, right? We live in a very consumer-oriented society.
Yeah. I mean, oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's absolutely the case. And, you know, there's certainly cultures, you know, that don't have that focus, and I think that's, you know, one thing that we tried to bring up in the paper is that this is a very, you know, this is a Western sample. But you're right, it's hard to get away from that. It's hard to get away from comparisons, social comparisons to your neighbor and to other folks, and there's a lot of work on those sorts of decisions as well. But, you know, I think it's also the case that, you know, even aside from the consumerism that exists out there, or advertising or whatever it may be, I think there's a sense that money to some extent is easier to quantify than time. I mean, time, we can count it, but we have an easier time figuring out what money will buy us. And time is a little bit more abstract. It's harder to say exactly what an extra hour or an extra 2 hours will get us in terms of our well-being, whereas with money, you know, if I say, well, if it's an extra $200 here or there, I think we know, we can think of a lot of things that could buy us, and it makes it easier to gravitate toward picking it.
Yeah, and I was going to say that in line with that, perhaps because of sort of consumerism and American culture, but and also I think because it is easier to quantify in this choice of, you know, what is an extra $100 versus an extra couple hours. But you do see that there is a greater focus on money. So if you look at what people search for on Google, for instance, people are more likely to in America, search for dollar than hour, and they're more likely to search for save money than save time, just as a little support for this observation that there is a general focus on money than time. Mm. And then, of course, our findings encourage a bit of a shift, perhaps. And I would actually say that there is, amongst millennials, there is an increasing shift, and also within marketing, because they're starting to need to speak more directly to millennials, is that there is an increasing shift and a focus on the accumulation of experiences.
Yes.
Perhaps more so, or not more so, but as an objective in addition to material goods, and that seems to be resonating with younger folks.
Mm-hmm. Can you have too much time?
that's a tough question. probably if you don't know how to spend it.
Yeah, so our if looking at our data, we looked at, of course, this choice between time and money and happiness. But with that, we also, in order to be able to control for how much time and money people had, we asked people their subjective sense of how much time they have and their subjective sense of how much money they have, as well as in an attempt to get more sort of objective is their income, as well as we're trying to capture discretionary time by measuring an average or approximately how many hours they work per week. And what we saw was that actually having more time, so people that they felt like they had more time and people who had more discretionary time, as in worked fewer hours a week, weren't actually happier in and of itself. So, and there was actually, there's an inconsistent relationship across our various samples. And so I think there's a lot of research that can be done to explore what is the relationship between how much time you have and happiness. And I think that, as Hal mentioned, I think that the reason that it's so hard to, that there hasn't been a, I haven't seen work that has very convincingly addressed that question, and I think it is because of this answer of how should you spend it. And so people who feel like they have so much time and they're just trying to, they're sort of waiting for each day to pass, that's obviously not, that's not a good experience of time. So I think that that's an open question.
And in fact, that is sort of the crux of boredom, is having too much time and feeling like it's moving very slowly. So that's, you know, it really is a deep question that I think cuts into a lot of different aspects of human psychology.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both of you, and we'll get the answer to what did Hal do. Did he go to that seminar, or did he spend the time with his infant daughter? What do you think? Here's our phone number. Which would you choose? What should you choose is really the correct phrasing of this, time or money. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We have one line open. Now, if you'd like to take it, you have the chance to do it, the time to do it. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'll bet some of you could wax poetic about this on our Facebook page, which would be great, the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's hop to our phone calls and to Amy in West Dallas first. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, my husband and I actually were recently given this decision. What we decided to do was, I was offered a position that would have, you know, more than doubled our household income. But it would have really sacrificed a lot of time because it was on a different shift than my husband. And so what we decided to do was, since his income can, you know, more than support us comfortably, on a budget, but comfortably, we decided to have more time. And at first it was really, you know, I kind of thought like, oh, think about everything we could do with that money. But really, it wasn't anything necessary. It was all just stuff that, you know, I wanted to do, but, you know, but time was the most important thing to us.
You know, that's really interesting. Double your salary. You had to look twice at that, right? I mean, you do. You have to look twice at it.
Definitely.
Yeah, but you're happy now you made the decision.
Very happy.
That's great.
Go ahead, Cassie.
and I'm glad that you, it sounds like you, or in light of our research, you certainly made the right decision. And it's often a trade-off that I think, because it's, again, as you pointed out, that it was so easy for you to see, you know, double a salary, that's very vivid, where it's harder to, or it takes that extra effort to start of thinking about how you would be spending that time, and more the time that you would lose spending with your husband. And you see this trade-off a lot, that that people don't account for the amount of time that they would either spend poorly or lose. And so you see this in real estate decisions of finding apartments. So in our field, there's folks who do research where they construct choices of basically how much are you willing to pay to have a shorter commute. And research shows that spending time commuting is one of the least happy ways to spend time.
Oh, sure.
But unfortunately, people actually are willing to sort of save on money for the and pay with time with taking a longer commute, which yeah. doesn't end up being beneficial for them in the long run.
Hmm.
And if I can just add to Amy's point, one of the things that I think, or actually research has actually found this recently, is that people fail to consider that if they do have an increase in salary, they'll actually change their lifestyle as well. So it's not that you'll, you know, all of a sudden be buying, all the, you know, you'll your life will change in so many ways. It's that you'll account for that slack in money very quickly. You'll start buying slightly more expensive clothes and going out to eat, you know, slightly more times a month, mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. And so all of a sudden it'll be 3 months into your new job and you'll think, no, I had double the salary, but it doesn't feel like it anymore,
right.
because your expenses change. And so, you know, whereas with the time, you can, the time together as a family, you know, assuming you like your family, is very valuable.
Yeah, you have to like your family. That's true. Scott, thank you, Amy, so much for your call. Scott in La Crosse. Hey, Scott.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi, Scott.
Well, from the perspective of a soon-to-be 70-year-old retiree, I would every time opt for more time, except I don't know who to talk to get it.
That's a great answer. Well, you're taking care of yourself, right, Scott?
Yeah, well, up to a point.
Right, right.
You've the got, point where I have to give anything I like up.
Yeah. Well, you've got an active mind, right? That's good. So that'll keep you going for a while.
Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you what. Since I've been retired, I'm busier than I've ever been.
Are you really?
I can't tell you. Yeah. And but the thing is, you know, I volunteer a lot. But as I always tell people, I've never volunteered a single hour to shovel coal. Uh-huh. I'm always doing stuff I love.
Yeah,
so
great.
It works for me.
Good
Thanks
for you.
Thanks for the great program. Really enjoying
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Scott. Long may you live. Great. Yeah. That's the thing. You reach a certain age in life and you think, ooh, it's not only time that you have because you're retired, but how am I going to make this really wonderful time because you don't have as much time left? It's really a sobering thought, isn't it?
Yeah, and we have, I know that Hal's done a bunch of work in this, as well as I have, of the effect of aging. And we actually see an effect or a result in our in this work where we do find, maybe not surprisingly, that as people get older, they're more likely to choose time over money.
Mm-hmm.
And then in some of my other work, I've looked at how age and really, which is tightly correlated, but not perfectly, with how much time people feel like they have left in life, influences the way they experience happiness and the types of experiences that lead to greater happiness. And so it's sort of interesting when you see folks, even at retirement, even though most people are around the same age, there's variation in how much time those folks feel like they have left. So are they viewing their retirement as an end, or are they viewing their retirement as having a whole life course in and of itself, of
mm-hmm.
having, you know, that beginning, you know, all the things that you want to do, and then with later, you might settle down. And so, for instance, in some of my work, I've looked at whether people extract greater happiness from ordinary versus extraordinary experiences, and finding that when people are young or when they feel like they have a lot of time left, it's really extraordinary experiences, those amazing vacations, life milestones that lead to greatest happiness. But as people get older and they start to feel like their time is more limited, it's really ordinary pleasures, such as spending time with loved ones,
mm-hmm.
As well as even sort of enjoying, you know, a cup of coffee or a glass of wine. It's there's greater propensity to savor ordinary things as people feel like their time is more limited.
Oh, that's interesting. So maybe the young could learn from the old, and maybe the old can learn from the young in that regard. They both could use, you know, more time to enjoy ordinary experiences and some extraordinary experiences as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Oh, go ahead, sir.
No, you go ahead.
Well, there's some, as Cassie alluded to, there's some other work that actually my graduate advisor, Laura Carstensen, pioneered a lot of, saying that older people are to some extent better at choosing their time to the extent that they think about prioritizing emotional goals. So as the caller just said, when you get older, you start realizing that you don't have as much time left, and you don't have as much time for the negative stuff, and so it makes sense to focus on the things that are truly meaningful. Whereas when you're younger, you know, you can afford to do some things that might be not always positive, but will at least help you gather information, learn about the world,
right,
collect new knowledge. And so that, you know, it might be adaptive in some ways to choose to do things that you at least learn from, as long as you are, in fact, learning from them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Scott. Yeah. Nice to hear from you. Chris in Oshkosh. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Kathleen. It's been a long time. I've been working too hard to listen to you. It's good to have a day off.
You needed the time, Chris.
I'll tell you what. I think what most people would consider to be a very, very highly compensated professional, and I work under a collective bargaining agreement which guarantees me a minimum number of days off and a certain monthly compensation. However, my company discovered very early on that it is much more economical for them to pay overtime than it is to hire an incremental worker and pay the associated benefits. Within the terms of our agreement, they have the ability to compel overtime and do so with great vigor, often reducing one's available time off to an absolute minimum. And I have to tell you, that time, there is no amount of money that can compensate for the time that you've lost. I'm 61. I'll be retiring in 4 years by federal mandate. That'll give you a clue as to my profession, I guess. But those of us who fly the friendly skies are often placed in this situation. We have a very high divorce rate, pretty fair alcoholism rate.
Oh, Chris.
So, at any rate, just my 2 cents worth placed into your money versus time equation. I will vote for time every time.
Yeah, maybe you need to let your employers know about all of these studies, Chris, and they'll have happier employees if they had a little more time.
They're not interested in happy employees, Kathleen.
Well, they should be.
We do actually a approved fatigue management program.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we have it because it's written down on paper. Of course, implementing it will frequently get one involved in a disciplinary hearing. So. Mm.
Yeah, that's so disheartening to hear. And I think if you think about, you know, from the employer's perspective, ideally they think that their employees' well-being is something worth optimizing for, you know, your tenure and your productivity, right, and your happiness at work. And presumably that could potentially translate into your performance at work. And it makes me sad to hear that employers aren't sort of looking to optimize their employees' well-being, because I think it could serve them well long-term.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to have that kind of situation. Mandatory overtime? Mandatory? Ooh.
Yeah. And even without that sort of compulsion from the employers, there's interesting work that is not my own. I was just seeing the numbers, and I thought it was so fascinating of the extent to which American workers are actually not taking paid vacation. And and the question is to why, and I actually think that might be interesting to explore from a from our sort of perspective. But you know, there are presumably cultural norms, and even though, as the caller pointed out, you know, they're on paper somewhere, it says that they have time off. But the extent to which people actually feel like they can take it. Something like 60% of American workers left vacation time unused. Mm-hmm. And there were 658 million vacation days that went unused last year alone.
Yeah, it's not going to get you more money, probably. You're not going to get a raise because you gave up your vacation time. Thanks, Chris, very much for your call. I'm sorry you have to work so hard. Our number is 800-486-8655. I think that we can hear your story now, Hal, because I know people have been at the edge of their chairs wondering, what did you choose, the seminar or the baby?
Well, luckily, you know, we had already written our paper and gathered our data when I had the choice, so I had a clear guide in front of me. It would have been hard to choose the money over the time, even knowing what was the better choice. And I had, you know, my wife at home who had only recently given birth, so that also upped the ante a little bit. But, you know, so I chose to stay home with the baby and hone my diaper changing skills rather than make some money at the speaker seminar. But, you know, I'll note that, you know, in this anecdote, which was, it was an easy anecdote to relate, and, you know, I was only the most recent one to have a baby and have this trade-off. Cassie also has two kids, one of whom is only a couple months older, and I know she's had the same trade-offs. And, you know, it's not an easy decision to make. It's not that every time, you know, now that we've done this research, we say, well, just choose time, because sometimes, you know, there is an indifference point that you need to cross, and you'd say, well, you know, maybe some amount of money will actually help in the long run. I mean, the first caller, I believe it was Amy, who said, you know, doubling her salary, that's a big decision to
right.
make. And I think it's, you know, the more that the choice becomes, you know, greater in magnitude, the harder it is. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's something that we have to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that the sort of exercise that Hal went through, and actually Hal can remind me of the name of the blogger, but there's
Tim Urban,
Tim Urban, of leading you to think about time, perhaps to make it more objective of what is every Saturday, you know, worth, or how many Saturdays do you have left, starts to make you realize just how valuable that time is as well, and particularly the quality time, you know, those weekends or those vacations or those summers, particularly if you live far away or out of in a different place from folks who are close to you, whether it's your family, and realizing, you know, not going home for a Thanksgiving, well, how many Thanksgivings might there be left?
Oh, I know.
It's a really, the blog is called WaitButWhy.com, and he has this guy, Tim Urban. He has an amazing ability to graphically represent difficult concepts, and he says, you know, well, when you think about choosing what book to read next, you think, well, I could choose anything. I could read any number of books. And they said, well, how many books do you actually read in a year, and how many years will you still be alive? And, you know, he said, I think I only have 250 books left to read in my life, so I better choose wisely. it's a little bit, it's very poignant.
Yeah, so. And I know that you had 222 weeks until your daughter started kindergarten.
Yeah, and then Saturdays have to take on a whole different meaning than just sitting around hanging out with her.
Absolutely. Well, and then you look at when people really do need time and that our society won't give people. Mm-hmm. When you mention your children, I would bet 90% of people answering, particularly moms who do a lot of the childcare and have given
yep.
birth, for heaven's sake, would say, mm-hmm. you know, I need time. I need 6 months. I need 7 months. And the fact that we don't even give new moms very much time, some are back at work in 2 weeks, is just crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean this is a major issue. I mean, I think it's even come up in this election cycle, is, you know, is parental leave, and
right.
You know, if we look to some of the examples of other developed countries out there, we're definitely lagging behind. America's lagging behind in that regard. And even if you look to other companies within the country, there's, you know, we both have friends who, you know, have taken jobs in Silicon Valley, and so, you know, I have one friend who took took 9 months off after having a baby, and that was encouraged. And it, you know, it goes back to the earlier conversation. It was encouraged precisely because the company realized that that's the type of thing that would lead to a happier employee and one who would be more committed to the company, stay with them longer, be well rested when he returned, and, you know, ultimately have bonded with his child in a way that you can't discount.
Yeah. Let's
go.
And also, I'm sorry.
In our data, we measured a bunch of demographics, and so we could see who were the people who chose time versus money. And as I mentioned before, people who are older tend to choose time. Also, people who have children are more likely to choose time than you.
Right. I'm sure that's true.
Deduced. And people who are married also are more likely to choose time.
Hmm. Dave in Toma is next. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I just think it's interesting that the words earning, spending, and saving are applied in about the same context, the time and money and nothing else.
Yeah. It's interesting. Time and money, they are both resources, and they both can be, you know, budgeted, saved, wasted, spent. Yep. And it's, and, you know, we heard Kathleen, your mom, you know, always said told you to treat time as money, and Benjamin Franklin also encouraged us to do the same. But they also have differences, right? So despite the sort of metaphors and the sort of connections we can make between them, they are very different, and the extent to which we value them has big ramifications for our, as in our work we've shown, well-being. And also in some of my other work, I found that the way we spend our time is more reflective of who we are than how we spend our money. So even in one study where we ask consumers to focus on how much time they spent on a given product versus how much money they spent on the product, those who were led to think about time felt that the product said more about them and they felt more connected to them. Or to the product. And so just to make this point that while there are these similarities between the two, there are important differences, with time being more reflective of the self and, as we find, perhaps more tightly tied to emotional well-being.
Dave, thanks so much for your call. Nancy in Milwaukee, hi.
I wanted to say that there evidently is a supposition that when people are making the choice between time and money, they have excellent health, or at least reasonable health, because without health, it doesn't really matter if you have time or money. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if technology today would allow us to get into an airplane in Milwaukee and be in Paris in 22 and a half minutes, if your body, which is your primary vehicle, can't even make it onto the vehicle of the airplane. It doesn't. None of that matters. None of
right.
advancement in technology and anything matters if your body breaks down.
Yeah, your health is everything.
Yeah. You're absolutely right about that. And, you know, to a large extent, you know, in our research, we're careful to control for many relevant variables like age, and gender and income, but you're right that self-reported health, that's not something that we looked at in this paper, and there's assumptions that are made here, and one of the assumptions is that, you know, we're taking you know, a normative sample of people, and questions remain, which is, you know, do these same relationships between the choice of time and money and happiness, do those relationships still apply if we look at a relatively unhealthy sample or ones who have, you know, serious disabilities, et cetera? And I think you're absolutely correct to raise that question.
Thanks, Nancy. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about when you should choose, what you should choose, time or money. We have two guests with us this hour. Hal Hirschfield studies how thinking about time transforms the emotions and alters the judgments and decisions that people make. Cassie McGillner-Holmes is an associate professor of marketing at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. Actually, both of our guests work there, and we're talking about all their studies on time and money. Interesting conversation. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. More calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wayne is our next caller in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Kathleen. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
We are, I don't know how much of a demographic that we fit, but I'm a chronic under-earner and over-scheduler. I've spent my entire life over-scheduled, basically, and trying to earn and provide for my family adequately. However, in the last few years, between having a full-time plus job as well as a lot of freelance opportunities as well, and having now a granddaughter, we decided to make the choice to move from St. Louis back to Wisconsin and are in final preparations of finishing our move here, specifically because we wanted more time, not only more time with each other, more quality time in life, hopefully adding to our years, but also time helping to be a presence with our grandchild who, while we were raising our children without any parental influence, desperately wished we had involved grandparents with time to help out. And so we've decided to take a significant cut in pay, but hopefully have a lot better quality time here.
When is the move complete, Wayne?
The 26th of October.
Oh. I think you made the right choice, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Cassie says yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yes, I'm moved and inspired by your choice.
Yes.
I'm sure that your granddaughter and your, whether it's your daughter or son, will hugely appreciate your involvement and your time with them.
It's a very important relationship. They're very important.
One of the ways that we often think about answering these sorts of questions is, you know, if you could project yourself forward in time 10, 15, 20 years from now, you know, what are you going to look back on and feel happy about or regret? And there's not too many people that say, I regret staying at home. You know, I regret staying in St. Louis and making more money.
Yeah, right.
You know, I wish I had done that. That time with my grandkid wasn't that good.
Thanks, Wayne, so much for your call. Brad in Madison, hello.
Hello, great conversation. I choose time all the time. I'd like to tell you a quick story. I was 25 years old. I finished graduate school. I was kind of jumping on the kind of corporate business ladder. I happened to pick up rock climbing at the time, and I watched a group of my rock climber friends work to make money so that they could take 6 months off at a time and travel the world rock climbing. and the light bulb kind of went on for me that there's a different way to live. And from that point forward, I was about to write a book and, you know, pretend I was this big important person. And instead, I decided to always find jobs that gave me time off. And since then, my wife and I took a year-long honeymoon where we traveled the world for a year,
Brad,
living out of our backpack. We've recently taken our kids to Ecuador for multiple weeks at a time. We're planning a trip next summer to take them to Southeast Asia. They've lived out of a van camping. You know, we're fortunate enough that we make enough money so that we can kind of choose time as opposed to make more money in these big chunks. Mm.
So how do you do this, Brad? Are you doing different jobs all the time? Can you find that many people who will hire you for 6 months?
We're both teachers.
Ah.
And we make plenty of money as teachers. We live simply, and instead of trying to find teaching jobs where we make more money, or instead of working in the summer to try to make more money, we save our money and we decide to always spend it on these opportunities to go and do these kinds of things.
Hmm. Yeah, that nicely picked up on some research that shows that if you spend a given amount of money on an experience versus a material good, so these vacations that you're saving up for versus that fancy car or, you know, that bigger TV, that the experiences have contribute more to happiness and have longer lasting effects on happiness because people actually adapt very quickly to material possessions and more slowly to experiences. And then we always have those experiences in our memories, and then it also cultivates the relationships
that
we spend those experiences with. So that research would also suggest that you have made the right decision in your spending decisions as well.
Yeah, the shared experiences, the shared memories, you can't overstate how important those are.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is, again, it's the type of thing that creates stories, they create memories,
right.
Creates things that you often can't get from a new espresso maker or a new TV.
Absolutely. A lot of messages have been coming in. Let me give you a couple of these. Marcus on Facebook says, money is not necessarily always time well spent. And Linda says, I would choose money. I could then buy the tools needed that would give me more time.
You know, and I think that's a really important observation. I don't want anyone to take away from this that Cassie and I are thinking that there's something the matter with money or that time is always better. You know, in fact, there's a great research paper that said if you, you know, have so much money and you're not happy, it's probably because you're not spending it the right way. And so I think there's certainly things we can do with money to spend it better, to make our lives better and happier, especially if we know how to use it to buy ourselves, for example, more time.
Yes,
so I think
exactly.
That's a great point.
Thanks, Brad, so much for your call. Let us go to Tim in Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend retiring as soon as you finish college and enjoy life instead of knocking yourself out.
You know, it's funny. I Laura Carstensen, who's at Stanford, who we mentioned earlier, she has a somewhat radical proposal that the state system should actually support this sort of thing, that people should essentially take a you know, an early retirement and get Social Security payments when they're in their mid-20s and 30s and work on raising a family and doing these sorts of things, and then go back to work and work in their later years doing different types of jobs, maybe not manual labor when they're past 65 or 70, but doing things that will, you know, then give back as a way to be able to actually travel around and spend time with family when you're healthy enough to do so.
Michael,
so I don't know if that'll get picked up anytime soon, but it's an interesting suggestion.
Michael says, my position is that you need enough money for the time you will live. You can have money left over if you run out of time. That's
yes,
true.
And that's Hal's research on the retirement savings is certainly to encourage people to save wisely such that they can fund their retirement. And then I guess our encouragement would be to try not to have money left over and instead spend that money to have an amazing vacation with your family.
It's hard to make these predictions, though. That's one of the most
right.
difficult
yeah, you don't know.
You know, choices. Yeah.
And one more call. Cindy in Fox City. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. I was just wondering if the older people that you polled tended to say time and the younger people tended to say money.
Yes, we saw that there was a relationship between age and people's choices. So as people got older, they were more likely to say time than younger people.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, your assumption is correct. And even controlling for age, though, we should point out that you see this effect on happiness. So again, with sort of it's hard to get your head our head around what that means controlling for, but if you sort of statistically speaking, if you took people of the same age and then asked them to choose time or money, those who would choose time are happier.
Mm. Thank you both so much. It was just a really thoughtful hour. A lot to think about. Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thanks for the time. That's what we had. We had time. And we thank Cassie Mogilner Holmes, an associate professor of marketing at UCLA's Anderson School of Management, and psychologist Hal Hirschfield, who's also at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. And thanks very much to Zeb Gozman for on-air production here in Milwaukee. We're with you again tomorrow, same time.
bye.